And welcome now to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland. And tonight, the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra will be performing in the Capitol Theater at the Overture Center in Madison, one of their Masterworks concerts. And it's going to be featuring, well, in addition to Haydn's Symphony No. 79 and Respighi's Ancient Airs and Dances Suite No. 1, both sure to please, two other things even more sure to please, Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 5 and Carl Nielsen's One and Only Flute Concerto. And both of those last two will involve my guest today, and she is Dionne Jackson. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Midday. You hail from the Chicago area these days?
Well, I spent 15 years as the assistant principal flute in Chicago Lyric Opera. I'm currently on sabbatical. I was offered a position as associate professor of flute at the University of Connecticut. So I've been out in Connecticut now since last June. But I was born and raised in Chicago, and it's my hometown in Glen Ellyn. And my family and friends are still there, so it's great to be back in the Midwest.
Back in this neighborhood, but like so many musicians today, and maybe it was true in previous days too, you're just traveling all over the place all the time.
That's right. I spent, I did my undergraduate degree at Indiana University, and then I was really fortunate to receive a Fulbright grant, which allowed me to study in Paris. And so I went to Paris for 2 years and studied at the Paris Conservatoire.
And that's not all. You won an award there.
Right. I was actually one of only two Americans I know about that received the first prize in flute. It's very difficult to get in, and it's got a tradition of flute playing like nowhere else, and it was an amazing experience.
And you took first place.
Right. The first prize.
And I've heard that, you know, there's a kind of a French flute sound as opposed to, say, a German or anyplace else flute sound. And what would that be?
So the tradition of sound really in France is, I think, more of a color issue, you know, because of all the amazing composers who not only worked and studied in France but taught at the conservatory. There's this verbal tradition that's handed down from professor to professor, and it really also involves the language and the color that's used in their sound, the language being very far forward in the mouth. And it's just about colors. They talk consistently about the different colors used in Ravel and Debussy. And
great colorists, to be sure.
Mm-hmm. So, and the use of vibrato is slightly different, too. They don't really, in America, they tend to teach, you know, how do we create vibrato and all the technical terms. But in France, it's just sort of, you're constantly listening to your professors and your colleagues. There's no private lessons.
Hearing them play, you mean.
All group lessons, which is very different than the system here. And because of that, again, the sound just gets kind of transferred from generation to generation.
Wow. So I wonder how many flutes you are away from, you know, the great flutists of the 19th century. Not too many, probably.
Well, my teacher, Alain Marion, and his assistant, Raymond Guillot, are very famous flutists. And what was so fabulous was Raymond Guillot actually studied with Marcel Moïse, and that was his professor.
Yes, one of the famous ones.
Very famous. And all of the method books, and I use this with my students consistently, are Marcel Moïse's. And then Alain Marion was a prodigy of Jean-Pierre Rampal, who really launched the flute into a solo instrument. And then it just keeps going on, Taffanel and Gobert.
Back to the 19th century.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, as long as you mentioned Debussy and, of course, Jean-Pierre Rampal, who, as a performer, launched the flute into sort of the big time in terms of the recording industry and really international reputation. But there's this piece that Debussy, a very modest little slender piece, used to launch the flute as a solo instrument as opposed to just another member of the orchestra.
That's right. This piece was written in 1913 called Syrinx, and every flutist knows it's a main staple in every flutist repertoire. And what's so special about it is that not only did it depict imagery and sort of based on impressionistic art where there's different colors and things, but the story behind it of Syrinx and the god of flute, which is named Pan, and the love story that goes with it, it's just such a beautiful representation of what the flute's capable of doing.
And so here it is in a couple of minutes, about all the color you could ask for. This is Syrinx, a relatively rare piece in its day for solo flute, and we'll be hearing it live in our studio from my guest today, Dionne Jackson.
Thank you.
The name of the piece, Syrinx. It's by Claude Debussy, and it's one of the pieces that I guess every flutist knows about. How, I don't want to use the word easy, Dion, but I mean, how much of a kind of a standard competition piece is it? At what age would a flutist be able to reasonably take that on?
I played it for the first time, actually, in high school, pretty early on, maybe a freshman or a sophomore. But at that time, it wasn't about really the phrases and making the music and the beauty that's really involved. It was more about the technicalities of playing the notes and playing the right rhythms and trying to master the diminuendos. But you really have to be a mature player to be able to express exactly what I think the meaning is about.
Well, that's on top of all the technique, isn't it, is the actual meaning behind it all. All those long notes, does that make it a challenge?
Very difficult for the breath support. Uh-huh. In fact, the story behind this is that they believe when Debussy wrote this, there were no bar lines and that it was all supposed to be improvisatory. And that when Marcel Moïse came along, he actually, he was a big smoker and he had some trouble with breathing. So he added all these extra breaths and they're not necessarily original to what was written. But
the breaths, are they actually written into flute parts?
They are.
No kidding.
But I don't take all of them. Knowing the history behind it, I try to play as long the phrases as long as I can and take as few breaths as possible.
I've talked to wind players over the years, and I remember one particular, actually the recorderist Franz Bruggen. I interviewed him many years ago, along with the harpsichord John Gibbons, I think, the harpsichordist at the same time. And I asked Franz Bruggen, so, you know, physically, how do you prepare for, you know, what must be this grueling work as a recorderist? And John Gibbons chips in and he says, he smokes a lot. And I thought, wow, how could you do that? But I guess, especially back in the day, people could or did.
Even when I was at the conservatory, some of the flutists in my class, especially the males, would just leave class and go smoke and come back. And it's just part of their culture. And but to have better breath support, actually, exercise regularly, and I run a lot to try to keep in swimming. Tends to keep my breath capacity going and strong.
Yeah, that makes more sense. That's what you'd expect. Another culture that we associate with the flute is Chinese culture, of course, East Asian cultures. And has a fair amount been written by Western composers for that, or is it still mostly from Asia?
There are, yes, I think now there is a fascination with the really neat rhythms and harmonies that come from Chinese culture, especially the pentatonic scale.
Sure.
And there's a piece that that I really love, the third movement of the Trois Pièces by Pierre Octave Feraud. And this was also a piece, he's a French composer, and I guess he went to China and he became fascinated with all of these celebrations that they have. And so the third movement of his piece is actually called La Fête du Double Cinq, which means the celebration on the fifth day of the fifth month of each year. And it's, I can remember, I went on tour once with the Chicago Symphony and was able to see all the celebrations in Shanghai and in Beijing. And they
do it up, don't they?
They really do. The colorful, the puppets and the colorful floats that they had and the costumes being so beautiful and colorful and people dancing in the streets. So this movement that I'm speaking of, it really represents that kind of style.
Okay, the festival of double five, exactly. Literally speaking. I'm Sudden, perhaps even cute finale there for that piece, the third of a set of pieces that have a Chinese quality to them. My guest today for the midday, playing live in our studio here, is Dionne Jackson. She's performing with Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra tonight. She'll be performing both in the Bach Brandenburg No. 5, right?
Yes.
Which has that prominent flute part. And then the I guess you could say fairly singular Nielsen Flute Concerto, which has all kinds of interesting things going on, especially with the intrusions of the trombone. Kind of a fun piece to follow. And this title, Image, of course, Debussy used it for major orchestral works, and you run across it occasionally in other French composers in particular, and you also find it in the work of Eugène Botza. Is he kind of a favorite flute composer in particular?
Well, this piece that he wrote, Image, was one of the pieces written actually for the prize at the Paris Conservatory. The tradition coming back to being that each year, the composer of the day, who was very popular, was commissioned a piece specifically for the students passing the prize. And generally, the piece was very, very difficult, and it had to kind of just juxtapose the technical aspects with the phrasing and the musical aspects. So this was the piece for the conservatory in 1923, I believe. And what I love about this piece is Botza was a genius. I think he had something like 7 first prizes from the Paris Conservatory in composition and violin and East Rolle music history and solfège. And he was really fascinated by the jazz that was happening in Paris at the time, too. So a lot of his works kind of incorporate some jazz.
The French really picked up on that, didn't they? Those in Paris in the 20s. How could you not?
Exactly. And because he was so influenced by that, this piece especially was sort of, it opens with a cadenza that's should sound completely improvised. And he was also fascinated by bird calls, kind of like Messiaen. So you'll hear some of these mystical bird calls, and then there's a dance, you know, movement in 6-8, and then it goes into this beautiful melody in 3-4. So
a lot of things going on here in just a few minutes. And this piece is just called Images, Eugène Botza. And again, the flutist live in our FM studio today is Dionne Jackson.
Thank you.
You make it look easy, but it doesn't sound easy. That was a piece called Image by Eugène Bozza, and one of the tours de force for the flutist, and in this case the flutist was Dion Jackson, who's performing two works with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra tonight. And I see this trend more and more now, where a soloist comes and plays not one, but two works on a program. Is that, in your experience, is that happening more and more?
I have not been aware of that happening more and more. I think it's so difficult to just prepare one concerto, especially something like the Nielsen, which is so technically difficult and takes so much energy to play fantastically, and then to pair it with the Bach, which is just such a completely different style. It's so beautiful too. It adds a challenge, but I'm so happy we're doing it, because I think it's just, the orchestra sounds amazing and the soloists sound fabulous, and it's going to be a great experience.
And that'll be tonight at 8 o'clock, the Capitol Theater at the Overture Center in Madison, the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra with flutist Dion Jackson. Thanks for stopping by and sharing some of your music.
Thank you so much.